Good morning. So I got here 3 seconds before the first note was sung. A long story about an Uber cab ride. Better left for another day. Happy Pride. Happy Pride. Happy Pride. Happy Pride. You can't say it enough because there are people who gave their lives, put their bodies in the way and created a future unimaginable almost 50 years ago. So all at the very least we can do is say happy Pride. When I was thinking about this sermon and thinking about my experience with pride and being proud and all that that meant, I thought about the first time I went to Gay Pride, and it was actually by accident. And I know that you're saying to yourself, that's what you used to tell people, that you just happened to show up on Christopher Street that day. But it really is true, and what happened was, it was a Sunday. We had actually gone to church that morning. I'd gotten home, and a friend called me and said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "We just got home." And he said, "Come to the Village." And I was like, "Well, why?" He said, "It's Queen's Day, honey. Get down here." And I said, "Okay." And I lived in, at that time, Co-op City in the Bronx. So that's a commitment to get on the number two train. You're not near the number two train. Those of you who all know where Co-op City is, you got to take a bus to get to the number two train and then take the number two train from Gun Hill Road down to 14th Street and then transfer and get on the number one train. So that was an hour and a half on a Sunday. And I got off the train and came up the steps. And I could not have imagined what I was walking into. And I was walking into my future as a whole and complete person. Because for the first time in my life, I saw a community celebrating an aspect of who I knew myself to be and didn't fully have the capacity to share or to say. So when we talk about pride, we're not just talking about a parade, and we're not just talking about celebration, and we're not just talking about gender bending and not understanding. What we're talking about is a day where the possibility of healing takes place. And that healing is not just for, by the way, the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community. Because we have a long way to go in our thoughts about sexuality, period. And everybody is besieged by conversations of the past versus who we know ourselves in God to be today. It's interesting to me that the Friday before, maybe almost 24 hours before the events in Orlando, I was actually in a bar with my best friend Fred, who is here, and a couple of other people, and just having a drink at the end of the week and laughing and talking as we had probably for the last 30 or 35 years. Not one of us thinking in that ground that looks like a bar but is hallowed ground for people to actually shed the shame and disgrace that they sometimes feel just walking around, going to work, and taking care of life. Not once did we think that our lives might be in jeopardy because we were in that space. I thought about, and there's been any number of conversations going on about the how and the why, and I thought about the conditions that were present in society at the time of the Stonewall riots, that there was graft and corruption, and that the only way a gay bar could exist would be if it was in the back pocket of a police officer, that there was inequality across social and racial and gender and political aims, that there was social and economic upheaval and strife with a growing underclass, very clearly seen by the children, the young people, the teenagers who called themselves gay or lesbian, living across the street from Stonewall in Christopher Street Park. Sound familiar? You know, I always like to go to the gospel according to Merriam-Webster to find out kind of what language we're using and what we're calling into being. And when we talk about pride, there are a couple of definitions, and pride is one of those words that clearly has a light and a dark to it, depending on how it's being expressed in the world. That pride can be a feeling that you respect yourself and deserve to be respected by other people, that somehow this is reasonable or a justifiable self-respect. Pride can also be a feeling that you are more important or better than other people, an inordinate amount of self-esteem, that somehow all of God's power has been imbued just into you, and that everything else in creation pales in comparison to the awesomeness that you are. And then pride can also be a feeling of happiness that you get when you or someone you know does something good or difficult. So the first myth of pride that I want to explore briefly is the idea that we've arrived, and that pride, the celebration, is unnecessary. I'm told that there is a Unity saying that says, set it right and see it right. In order to set something right, you got to see it right. And I would offer for your consideration that where we are right now is what we have imagined, what we have seen thus far, but we have some more work to do to set this right. That there is more imagining and knowing to do by all of us who call ourselves spiritual people in order that the world might be shared and enjoyed equally, for real, right now. Imagine that the only place where you can go, just imagine this, to try and get into what was going on in 1969 at a little bar called Stonewall. Imagine that the only place where you can go to truly be yourself that is not in the neighborhood in which you live is a bar. That's the place where you can go. And that in that bar, at any point, the lights can come up. And you know that that means that the police are coming through the door, as they did last month or 2 weeks ago when you were there, and that you will be asked to line up and show your identification of some kind that says who you are that is so brazen to be in this place. And that depending on what you're wearing and how your makeup is and how your wig is, and if you don't happen to be the most masculine, meaning the most destructive human being in the room, then someone is going to take you into the bathroom and check to see what your sex is versus how you appear in that moment. And that after all of this is done, that you might be let go to live your life for another 2 weeks until they come back, or you might be arrested, and whether you're arrested or not, you might actually be reported to your employer, who could then fire you because there are no legal protections around keeping you because you are known to now be a deviant. Someone that the American Psychological Association determined that you are mentally ill. That's as far as we got in our imagining in 1969. There are still 29 states in the United States of America where a lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender person can walk into their job and solely because of how they and who they choose to love can be released from service, can be released from their job. We have more imagining to do. We have not arrived. And I don't want to dismiss marriage equality at all, but I also can't ignore the numbers of young people, many of whom are children of color, who never finish high school, never go to college, never enjoy the fruits and benefits of knowing themselves as whole and complete, knowing that they are inextricably connected to God in a way that would soothe their aching hearts. And that exists today. You see, we have to continue to imagine what freedom looks like. And if you've experienced freedom, if you experience it yourself today, the thing we have to then say is, what good is your freedom if it doesn't empower you to free the slave sitting right next to you? We have more imagining to do. The second myth is that pride is for the LGBT community. Because you see that at the time, there was about a year's gap between Stonewall and the first pride parades that took place in New York and San Francisco and Los Angeles and Chicago. And those parades, like any other memorial parade, were so that, as our Jewish brothers and sisters have said since the Holocaust, never again. But you see, the thing that we saw in Orlando that might have escaped us is that it wasn't just LGBT people in that bar. There were friends who were straight and allies in that bar who lost their lives that night because of who they loved. So pride, you see, is our opportunity as spiritual people in particular to reconnect ourselves to the idea that all people are divine expressions of God, that all of us are. And that includes the person in the jail cell. That includes the unwed mother. That includes all of the people who we have yet to fully pull in to the household of faith. We have more imagining to do. It's believed that the gunmen, and I have to say, one of the things that has been most disturbing, in addition to the incident itself, has been all of the conjecture that is presented as truth. All of the supposings and the what ifs, and all that we take these supposings to mean. So it's believed that the gunman was closeted, that he had been influenced by his ethnic background and the religious beliefs that he was exposed to, and questionable how much he really believed these beliefs, or were they just convenient to explain the barbarous activity he engaged in. It's believed or talked about or thought about and not fully explained that he was radicalized to take lives. And let me say this about ISIS. And you can tell them I said this. It's different when you come out ahead of something and say, we are about to do damage to X location. And anybody in X location at this time is going to be hurt. It's a whole nother thing to 36 hours after an event to come out and say, oh yeah, we're responsible for that. After the whole world has been wondering, are y'all responsible for that? Are y'all responsible? Well, why would I not say that I was responsible for it? Since y'all believe it, why should I give that up? It's just, I wonder how stupid do people think we are. The things that we do know is that people remain closeted today. People remain afraid that they will lose their jobs, their homes, their children, the love of their family today, and have not taken any egregious actions outside of themselves. Rather, they start to destroy themselves from the inside out. That we do know. We know that as a humanity, as spiritual beings having a human experience, that we still are uncovering the full nature of the relationship between God and all of the different sexuality expressions that spring forth. We know that we continue to deal with that, and we know that most traditions on the planet are still uncovering that. And until we come to more answers, we will have more people who feel like they need to hide. As believers, there's a charge on our life that when we talk about God is love and that love wins, we've got to back that up now. We don't get to live in platitudes any longer and expect the world to transform. Because you see, God and we co-create with God, but too often we step back from the co-creation table. We'll ask God for what we want, and then God says, well, I need you to do a couple of things about that. Like that person that's sitting next to you on the subway talking about anti-God stuff, I need you to turn to them and say that you love them. And then we kind of say, oh, well, see, God, now you're going a little bit too far. I don't really know that I can, you know, that's not really what I meant about a world that works for everybody. I thought that you would just kind of do that and suck out all the people that were no good, and then, you know, everything would be manna, and we would live for 1,000 years of joy and happiness and jubilee. There's work to do for spiritual people as much as anyone else. Because you see, this power of imagination quickly can devolve into wishing. And there's no power in wishing. There's hope, and hope is not a bad thing, but there is power in imagining and then taking actions that are consistent with what God is opening up inside your spirit as a way for the world to actually work for everyone. My last and the last and final myth I want to talk about is that imagination alone will save us. That imagination alone will save us. That this power of imagination, that if we just imagine things, that if we just hold a high intention for how the world can be, that that is enough. It is insufficient. We have to do more than think good thoughts. We have to lay ourselves wide open to Spirit and ask God, God, help me see beyond this human eye. Open up my spiritual eye, open my third eye to what I cannot see. Imagine more than God doing something. We have to now imagine God doing something with and through us. We can't wait for the Red Sea to part and for a pillar of fire to emerge between us and the Egyptians. That was a moment in time and a really good movie. But there is more that God can do with and through you, sitting in your seat under the hearing of my voice right now. I want you to say this with me. God, okay, now y'all have to do better than that. Remember that wishing I talked about? That was kind of that wishing level of talking to the holiness. God,
I imagine myself
as the conduit,
for
your work.
Strengthen me.
Use me.
Remove anything
that is not useful
in your holy work.
That which I've seen
in my mind's eye,
be with me
as I take action
to see that
fulfilled in the world.
And so it is.
Let that be your prayer.
Let that be your prayer on this Pride Day. And whether you're walking in the parade today or just in your general comings and goings, Imagine a world where God's love flows from every hill to every valley, to the depths of the sea that surrounds this thing that we call Earth and radiates out into the universe. See that today as you walk. Know that tomorrow, after the Pride Parade is over, after the celebration, after the jigging and the jugging and the jump up, after all of that, when there's no special day put aside, remember that God is and can do anything through us. God bless you. Happy Pride. Thank you so much for letting me be here today.
Reverend Mark Fowler.
And as we sit comfortably in our seats, with a few deep breaths, we release any tension in our body and allow our mind to come to rest. Listen to the soothing music and the uplifting affirmations to center our minds and to go deeper, deeper in ourselves. And I ask you to take a situation with which you are having difficulty. Imagine that you are able to zoom out. Focus on the situation and on anyone involved. Relax until you imagine that you are viewing the scene from a distance. You can no longer hear any harsh words or see anything that is unpleasing to the eye. As you zoom out, watch this scene in your mind. Now send positive energy to the interaction and allow understanding to pour in. Every person wants to be understood and accepted. So send love from your heart to the scene as you watch it play in your mind. And imagine the positive energy intertwining. Explore and experience these affirmations and truths. I understand that in this vast universe of possibilities, there is no basis for judging things as right or wrong. I can choose to give weight to an issue, or I can operate from a healthy point of neutrality. I choose my actions and responses in the now as they arise. I am free, like every other person, to participate in a journey that is based on my own perspective as a child of the divine. And I have the ability to be strong in my beliefs, my choices, without needing to convince or explain to others. We commit ourselves to living and working with one another in harmony, understanding, and respect. And we know this and pray this in the silence. Take a deep cleansing breath. Once again, imagine now that you're zooming out, moving up and away until you can no longer see the details of that situation at all and release it to a place of feeling of neutrality and begin to see you on this planet in peace. Feel the love for the planet and all of us as it shines. Allow yourself to feel the smallness of you, but the oneness that we know the truth of. Allow your heart to feel love, your mind to experience oneness, your body to know peace. And as you gather these feelings within, vow to carry the strength they bring with you as you relate to others and go about your day. Because truly, we all need each other to survive.